Okay, we're going to do a roundtable of reports from member organizations, and we'll start with Richard Sullivan of Everett, Washington.
I guess I'll say thank you. I'm honored to be invited here. Mr. Fowler told me about this organization. I didn't know anything about it. Everett Maritime Museum is new. We have our 501c3. We've been interested in keeping the Collins Building. That's actually how we got together. It was a 60,000 square foot heavy timber building on the Everett waterfront that was slated for demolition by the port 4 years ago. And the port had worked diligently to accomplish that. And the building has been under siege that entire time. Finally, a lawsuit and a stay stopped the demolition. All of the port commissioners have been replaced. We have a new commission. I'll be... And I have a copy here that I used in the presentation at the caucus last Wednesday. Thank you. Just a couple of things. I don't know how much you talk about at these meetings. I'll be brief since I haven't heard one of your roundtable discussions. I'm starting this out really cold. So the idea is to save the Collins Building. We have Representative John McCoy and Mike Sells and Hans Dunchy on our side. Also, a couple of senators are weighing in, but they aren't as positive. They've given support. Gene Berkey is all in favor of a museum, a place for the public market, saving the Collins Building. I am an architect. I have been under the building, through the building. It is not in the poor condition it has been purported to be. Now, switching over, I can get onto a long story about the Collins Building, but as far as the Everett Maritime Museum, it's slated to go into the second floor, and the reason we got into the museum business, even though we aren't really started, we have a 501c3, Dick Idle, who owned the Everett Shipbuilding Company, he's sold to sold the shipbuilding company, and I was chief engineer on the Port of Everett a long time ago, and I had met Dick Idle, and I was into building boats at that time as well as buying real estate. And so Dick and I became friends because I worked for the port, then we kind of lost touch, and then we came back together on the Collins Building. He wanted to start some sort of a museum and wanted to start some kind of a school to help shipwrights, a school for shipwrights. And according to him, the average age of shipwrights today is 45 years old, and there aren't a lot of them coming up to fill in the aging community of shipwrights. And so he wanted to and is still interested in starting a school. But Everett has a heritage of boats and boat building and shipping, and it's not really represented. I've always been around the water from the time my parents introduced me to, they heard that I had a sailboat, and I grew up on a sailboat, at least in the summertime. And when I was growing up, most of the life vests that people had were cork life vests. They didn't have the modern ones. And apparently, I don't remember this, but my father has told the story, or my mother has told the story on my father. Apparently, there was a bulletin or something that said the life vests, if it's a small child, it'll flip them upside down and drown them because their legs and lower body aren't heavy enough to keep the life jacket upright. And so my father, always wanting to make sure that things were correct and protect me, put a life jacket on me and tossed me overboard, and yep, it flipped me upside down. So I was afraid of the water until I was about 7 after that experience. But I've gotten over that, and I've survived many of boats and building boats. I built canoes at the University of Washington while I went to school there at the canoe house, mostly refurbishing old towns and Willits canoes. But for the Maritime Museum, we have a lot of people that are interested in giving us artifacts from around Everett. John Trail has been extremely interested about getting Navy vessels involved. The fellow, I've forgotten his name, owns Cutty Sark in Seattle.
Roger Adler.
has a home right over by my beach house near Port Orchard. And I'm not acquainted yet, but I've been introduced, sort of, to all of you. And I think this is an exciting time to start a museum for the Maritime in Everett. And with your help and indulgence, maybe we can get off to a good start, even in this economy. So I would appreciate being allowed to associate with you people and learn from you.
You'd be mine and share.
What we did with Richard and his two colleagues, they came to the Paris Caucus, our Legislative Heritage Caucus, which meets during the Washington legislative session every Wednesday morning at 7 o'clock. Richard made a presentation at the Heritage Caucus meeting last Wednesday, as did Les, an update on his project. And so afterwards, they asked to meet with me for an hour over at the cafeteria. And we talked about how this kind of thing develops in the community. We stress the fact that we have not had any representation or any interest to this point from Everett in developing something, so we were very pleased to see them there and interested, and we pledged our council support and all of you as experts with a lot of experience in helping them develop their fledgling project, which has great opportunities for the future. So Richard and his colleagues asked if they drafted a letter of support from this organization, if we would approve that letter. I said we had done this kind of activity in the past and represented ourselves as an organization of great representatives and great organizations and all kinds of organization and bylaws and all of that. So, but I think the council's approval of this is going to be very important to the project. So here is the letter of support that Dick and I would sign on behalf of the council, and we'd like you to take a look at it. And if you agree, we'd like to take a kind of an informal vote to approve sending this letter to the Everett Maritime Museum Group in supporting their efforts.
I'd like to make one comment when you mentioned John Trail. John Trail is a retired master chief from the Abraham Lincoln, and has been a collector to the point of being a scavenger. For a number of years, he has an incredible collection of stuff at his own personal house. And he's also the person who put together the Charles Trail exhibit that's down. It was put into the old Odyssey, which is now the MEC, the Maritime Event Center, down on the Seattle waterfront.
The bridge of a destroyer.
Yeah.
Charles Trail.
Looks good.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Did you think Sam's the new coordinator?
Should you add an address down here?
Sam? Johnson?
The guy down here in the corner.
Oh,
sure,
we could.
He's like Cincy official.
Sure.
He's
already a huge American.
Well, we didn't know he was going to be official.
Yeah.
No.
I was going to say that having been relatively, I've been going through all of our policy and looking at what we have, and rather than reinvent the wheel, you're probably, since all of our stuff is AAM approved and accredited, it might be worthwhile to sort of ship off any policy, collection policy particularly, to you, and then you can modify them as you need, but at least you know that AAM approves of them.
Wow.
Already.
Yeah.
And we, the Puget Sound Maritime Historical Society, has a new interim executive director. She's former director of the Anacortes Museum, which has the W.T. Preston and the Skagit County Museum, former president of the Washington Museum Association, and so she would be a great resource as well. She's at Mohai with the society. So we have a lot of great resources, Sam says.
Yeah, get those accessioning policies set
before you start grabbing this.
That's like the accessioning policy.
Well, like you said, because giving gifts, you'll hear me talk about this a little bit later. Also, red flag goes up for me.
Yeah.
Every gift that you get has got to be an artifact, should be accompanied by some sort of endowment, no matter how small it is, it's only $5. It's just almost a policy, because you will rue the day when you don't start off from the get-go and make that a firm policy. You will not have enough money.
And all those $5 to get rid of that tipping fee.
And all those angry families who donated stuff that you are going to turn around and sell, or you have to deal with and worry about that up front. Anyway.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Good point. Let's go around.
Anybody?
We'll defer over that time.
Okay.
anybody have a problem with signing the letter?
I love doing it. I'm just curious where we say we're pleased by the recent progress to make it a thing, because it feels like what we're really pleased by is the vision of what this is going to do, and at least I, for one, don't really know all the specifics of what the recent progress is, so I think for me, I'd be more comfortable if it was a little more talking about the future and what all this could be as opposed to what's happened recently.
Okay, well, they drafted it, and so Betsy can get the... get those changes back to me, and we'll take a look at that. I think we're just recognizing the fact that there have been some difficulties, and especially with the port and all that. Your future vision is fine.
Patterson?
Okay, let's see. Part of the Retired Tug Association. It's been very quiet. I have a lot of peas on my plate. And that's one of the teams that haven't had much attention. A group of us had a marvelous time in Olympia, and we thought it ought to get together, so they got a letter out to a group of kind of a central Puget Sound group, and we met for a dinner, etc., down at the Tacoma Seaport, and there seems to be quite a bit of interest there, and there's always more tugs coming available, and some of them are large and some of them are small, but the people seem to be very interested. The corn is gone, many of the old boats have gone, but there still seems to be a lot of interest, just as from the organization, so I suspect that it may continue on. Started in 1972.
Are you doing a newsletter now or not? Is it died out?
No,
we're trying.
Yeah.
But Peter Foraker gave up the newsletter, which is one of the reasons that the organization kind of fell apart for a while. The other reason is that the Canadians have the West Coast Workboat Association now, and they are pretty much staying up there, not coming across the border. But Olympia this year, we saw this group of some new owners on the small tugs down in the Southern Sound, that maybe that would become the core of the organization. And I want to pick up on something. Someone contacted us some while ago, I don't know if this is true or not, but said that we had the only group really left of old wooden tugs. And they are disappearing at a rapid rate, and I'm wondering if they've been documented.
Actually, somebody called me about some Foss plants, one of the Foss boats, and I said, talk to Foss, and said, Foss doesn't have those plants, so I don't know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
I put one on the fall off horn, or Marlon rather. anyway, we know he would know, but I one of those things is that people ignore them until they're gone.
They are disappearing, and right now it's a bit scary because we have several for sale that have been for sale for some while, and we have the Amazon owners, and your boat's for sale, you can't keep it up anymore, you don't find an owner pretty soon.
I think we have how many TIPS plans in our collection at Lohi? 4,000 or something like that, and I don't know how many of those are tugboats, but that'd be a good place to get together with Paul Marlow and John Kelly.
There'll be famous tugs in there, but I don't think there'll be any of the little tugs like, I don't know, Fox and Harbor tugs. They just whack them together. They're done?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to go to Mike Scally and say, okay, now we know you have some. You're the Fox historian, and what are there, what's there in terms of ship plans, tug plans?
The interesting, just going to convention, not officially connected, but the Gig Harbor Boat Shop, the old heavy boat company in Gig Harbor, has their 501c3 now and are organized and have cleaned up the shipbuilding building and open. It's open on Saturdays and they're having classes. And
they have a little plug in there that nobody has any anywhere to get from.
Mm-hmm.
Turned out in somebody's barn or something, or somebody's field in Rosedale, about 26 feet. Pretty little boat.
Mm-hmm.
Older than dirt, but nobody knows anything about it.
Older than water.
The rest of it I defer to the
other building. Okay. Tennis and wooden boat?
Shall I start, Dick, and then you fill in? Actually, I'm going to start first with the Northwest School of Wooden Boat Building. They're in Port Hadlock. And a lot of times if you think Port Townsend, Port Hadlock is right nearby, there's obviously the big Northwest Maritime Center project that's drawn a lot of attention, rightly so, big project. But the Northwest School of Wooden Boat Building has a lot going on, and one of the biggest things for them is that they just got from the U.S. Department of Education, a level 4 something, which lets students apply for federal financial aid. And typically this time of year, they have one application for the subsequent year, and this year they have 11. So I think we're going to see a dramatic interest in that program. Your person who's interested in shipwrights joining the trade, I think absolutely should go talk to the folks at Port Hadlock. And perhaps you could set up an apprenticeship program for folks coming out. A fun thing, one of the boats they have right now is the boat that was used by the first woman to cross the Atlantic Ocean on a solo voyage in 1952. Here's the cover of the book. I'll pass it around. This is the director's name if you want to get in touch with him for any reason. They also started a program with the public schools in Chimicum and Port Townsend for the alternative kids to come down and work on building boats and then go on a 10-day voyage sailing the boats that they built. They also worked with a trade in Port Townsend who came and said, we are short on welders. And so in partnership with Peninsula Community College, they created a certified welder program that the community college offers at the Northwest School site in this building they built. And they're also offering community workshops in welding, so artists and gardeners, whoever else wants to come can learn, and they're going to do community hours. So I really think that school is really working on bringing a benefit to the community. And in the past, I think the niche has been, it's all kind of rich white guys when they're retired going and saying to learn how to smoke cork up pipes and make boats. And I think that that's shifting. And Tim Lee is one of their instructors. He's passionate about building replicas of Northwest design. And they've done a Randy boat from CWB. They've done some Uncle Tio boats. Oh, shoot. I'm forgetting the whole range. And one of the things we have to do is get him hooked up with National Park Service so the lines they've taken can get in, even though he hasn't used the laser technology, that they can get into the Library of Congress. So he's anyway, I just wanted awareness of that program to happen. Center for Women in Boats. As you know, we are currently existing on Camino Island and also down at the south end of Lake Union. A lot of you have already seen these, so just pass on them. But if you haven't seen it, just to get some context of what's happening, on page 6, this shows the park. And right now the park is under construction. It's a $20 million project. And it's going to reopen, the grand reopening, September 2010. Meanwhile, lots of construction continues and so forth. Another, the United Indian Salt Tribe building is going to go over on the West Lake side. The Historic Wharf, of course, is already active. Most of you know Museum of History and Industry is looking at moving into the Armory. For the groups who are currently in the Armory, we have through the end of October of this year, and then Mohai will start the construction. You might ask, where are we all going? And that's an excellent question. You'll also notice a box that's actually a placeholder in terms of shape, and that's for the new education center that the Center for Woodstock will be building in the park. Totally thrilled to say that City Council has signed up on our agreement with Parks and Rec. So we are moving forward on that, and we're doing a capital campaign to raise money for those things. But most of you know CWD also exists in the waterway right now, and right now we're completing about $500,000 project to strengthen these facilities. That's one of the things. With the new park, we had to rerun all our utilities. There's going to be a new gangway connecting the park to CWB, so that's going on. We're also shifting the location of our boat shop away from shore, increased circulation. In a big wind, you get a lot of boats on there, and it kind of turns the $1 million up. So we're actually going to put pilings in to hold the houseboats in place, and the mitigation for that is removing the creosote pilings that were there for the Ramona. And strengthening the docks, upgrading our sewage pump, the new docks and stuff. So this project's about halfway done. We hope to have it done by certainly by the opening of the park. Now, up at the north end of the lake, of Lake Union, is a site owned by King County Metro, and it is going to be surplus by King County for the Schooner Zodiac has been moored. The property is just adjacent. It goes Gas Works, and to the west of Gas Works, the police dock, and then it's this property, a 5,000 square foot building, 2 years. Yes, just east of the shipyard.
Okay.
Yes, between the shipyard and the harbor control.
Okay.
So, King County Metro wants to surplus it, means they need cash for the building. So, we sniffed around to figure out who might have cash. Voila, Seattle Parks and Rec passed a parks levy, the city passed a parks levy, so they have money for capital acquisition, but they don't have money for maintenance and operations. So we approached City Parks and said, hey, what about this property for a new park to be a companion campus to what's going on at the south end? Give Wallingford and Fremont community access to the water. And happily, the superintendent of Seattle Parks is interested in the idea, and City Council unanimously passed a resolution to have City Parks look at the acquisition of that site. There's an opportunity fund. We've nominated the park for that fund. The trick in the water. If you know, the city of Seattle is already struggling with cleanup efforts in Gas Works, and so there's goop underneath Gas Works, and some of that affects this site. There's also heavy metals in the water from the adjacent shipyard, so that's a totally separate cleanup project. And the city is trying to figure out, is there any way they can take ownership of this property without becoming liable for all sorts of environmental problems that were caused years ago. So we're waiting to see what happens on that. This document was the result of a collaborative planning grant that we got from the federal government, and we were able to both do some work with the staff of the organizations and volunteers that are at Lake Union, but also we got to hire some consultants, who's like Les or Ray Ashley from San Diego and so forth. This is the result of the planning, just so you know how it works. For a given chapter, on the left side, it gives the narrative about that subject, in this case, the fact that Lake Union tells the whole history of Seattle. And on the right-hand side, there's three columns, and one says, the research and planning we've completed. So for each of those chunks, if it has a little star after it, it means the actual report is on the website, so anybody can reference it if they want to. Projects we've undertaken and what's to come in the park. So this is a little bit of timeline at the bottom. This has tons of information in it, and it's a product of all the groups working together at Lake Union Park. There's now a second document that I don't have copies of. So I was wondering if I could just show it up here. I don't usually make a lot of presentations out of it. But from IMLS, Institute Museum Library Services, we did a companion document. What's the cool vision we have for the park? What are the stories that collectively we're going to tell there? This is the how do we work together to make that happen? And
identify potential real estate and have the union, maybe we can work with the city on
collection, we've been working on that. This is just back and forth a little, but the question is, does it help to work together? Is there a financial benefit to it? And this back and that thing suggests that there is. So how are we working together with our business model? If we're not creating a new 501c3 or any of that, it's a pretty informal networking model. And we have a number of initiatives that we define, and we pull out four here, and one of them is the second campus, it's in North End Lincoln. It's not just about the center for windows, it's a place for the storage to do work. And it's basically second campus to support all the different kinds of activity we've already defined in that first document. We're also looking, and this is a longer shot, but we're still working on it. There's a building in South of Union that's owned by the city for a city boy studio on the left, and it doesn't have enough space in the armory for everything. Like the research library doesn't move in there, the offices don't move in there. So the question is, in partnership with Lo-Fi, could we, the Maritime Group, and maybe some arts group, activate the Roy Street building and figure out how to come up with money for that? We want to create a shared curriculum guide so teachers can figure out, they want to bring their kids down, and what activities there are, regardless of which group is providing them. And there's more opportunity for really listening to the visitors and their experiences. And then we create an action plan with objectives and dollars and so forth. And we summarize that visually here. This basically says, one of the things we do is we work together to create powerful visitor experiences. And one of the things we do is collaborative public events. We also do outreach programs and so forth. If it's regular text, it's something we've done. If it's bold and italic, it's something we plan to do. And then we have the appendix, and the only thing I wanted to pull out is one that we want to add to this solid draft. So I think it's really useful for us if we can have something that describes how what we're doing compares to what other groups are doing. Not enough. We're doing their better things, but more a donor or a government person wants to know that. How do you tell me what's going on in Tacoma? Fort Thompson. Are you Fort Thompson? Or whatever. And so this is just the first draft, and I think it's something this group could really help with. So we have a shared vocabulary about what each of us are doing, and I think it makes each of us look stronger to be able to say to come to the service that we're going to be using. Okay, so I'm done with that one. The last thing I wanted to say about the center is Dick's collected a really cool collection of boats, and we now have a collection policy. We went through a conservation assessment. We just went through a museum assessment program. We have gotten grants from NEH and INLS to take care of our collection, and we are weeks away from being able to start presenting subsets of our collection catalog, not fancy printing, that we're planning to come to Sam's conference with a one-page description of each of the boats that we have in our permanent collection that relate to the Northwest. So I think that's cool. Dick, do you want to add anything?
I think that's great. I can't stop it. Colleen.
I'm not sure where we stand with the working group because there's many details and challenges to work out for the future. But all I know is that we have to move very soon, a few months. And when I first started this, we started making some big models, Vancouver's Ship of Discovery, and that was 14 feet, and then we wanted to be something that people would walk in the museum and just couldn't walk past it. They would have to stop and know the history. And then we did the exact, brought the first founders leaving from Portland to Seattle, and then we made that 12 feet. Then we made the Beaver, first steamer on Puget Sound and in this area. And that was a 10 feet. And so we have these three big models, and I'm trying to find a place now working to investigate different possibilities in Seattle. I'd like to keep them in Seattle because they were made for a maritime museum in Seattle. And of course, we didn't get the armory building. It was given to the Museum of History Industry instead. And their focus, of course, is much broader, and the space is limited. And so try to find a place with these models, and I have also two 10-feet models with a crane that kids can play on and crawl around and work the crane and with blocks and stuff. And these models are fantastic, you know, they'll never be duplicated, I don't think, because they each have, especially the large models, the timing was right. And the modelers were so enthusiastic. The discovery took 10 years. And the other two took about 2 years because they knew what to do. They had, you know, each piece was cut out, you know, measured carefully and put in. And so anyway, these modelers have to find a home. And I hope they'll be able to get South Lake Union, but we don't know now. And there's still a lot of details to work out. Anyway, another, of course, we to do public benefit, of course, we had an actor who would do a presentation in costume, do a presentation of the history of the discovery. And we also give classes to children and adults, and we're concentrating right now on doing some small radio control models for the future pond that's going to be at South Lake Union. And also I just heard recently that in loving memory of the Wawona, we have a kit boat that's going to be having kids make, and it will also be for sale. And I haven't seen it yet. I just got word that they made 50 of them, so.
In China.
Really?
Exactly. James Woodford came through and got his company to do this for us. So I haven't seen yet. Anxious to get one together and see what it looks like. But, so that's kind of where I stand right now. And our motto is don't dawdle, make a model for history. That's it.
I'm going to pass on the phone.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Okay, well, Dan Withers, Combatant Craft of America, and we've been a 501c3 for 10 years, and we specialize in those interested in military vessels. If you look at page 19 in this fine document, at the very bottom on the right, you'll see mention of one of the events we co-hosted, the Center for Wooden Boats, celebrating D-Day, and the vessel on the right was an 83-foot Coast Guard cutter that was at D-Day, and that event we reunited two crewmates that had not seen each other since they left France. And so we were talking last night about the possibility of an Armed Forces Day program this year, where we'll bring in the 83527, which is a 83-foot Coast Guard cutter that we continue to work on in Everett. So our interest is patrol and rescue boats on each town and the different types that exist. We have a website, a number of sites, but warboats.org is a site that tells the history of the small patrol boat from before World War I through present. And there's thousands of photos taken by veterans who have submitted their stories, whether it's a paragraph or a page of World War through the guys present. Started out sort of Vietnam-oriented because that's where my focus was at the time, but there's some phenomenal stories of goodwill and battles that the different guys went through, and pictures of them and their shipmates aboard their small craft. And I don't know, I get 100 pictures a month that we have to sort through to put on that site, so that's incredible. The 83527 was built in 1944 and it served in Tacoma from 1944 to 1962 as a southbound patrol boat. So we've met lots of veterans in the Tacoma area that served aboard it, as well as civilian people who remembered it or were involved in events on it. We're busy keeping her. The interior was pretty much gutted when we got it, and now we have a full interior, and we're kind of zeroing in on floor tile now. So, plenty to do. Thank you.
I always enjoy coming to these meetings because it's actually a double-edged sword. I love hearing what everybody's doing. And then when I leave, I'm exhausted. All the things that I still have to do. I never thought of envy as such a great motivator. You guys are servants to what we're doing. And as I always listen to Dave and Betsy, and what I know I'm going to be in for this afternoon with your presentation, it's always great to know that we'll always have mentors and we'll never surpass you. So really, it's a great thing. Let me, I just want to pass around just for a novel. This is the latest rendering, it's a cutaway rendering of what we're going to be doing at the Sea Flight.
It's a cutaway.
It's not an open air facility. We already have that.
Yeah, the coldest place in the history.
Only on cold days. But we'll be remedying that, we hope, inside of 2 years. We had a good year last year. We were very fortunate to have the governor and Senator Frazier and Representative Dungy, who are also very much enthusiastic for our project, to carry legislation through that was able to get $750,000 last year go towards our roof. In November, we had a week like I know we'll never experience. We had a $4 million week. Where we were able to get $2 million out of the city of Tacoma to go into a building that they own. That's a 15-year effort to get their involvement. And then we had a single $2 million donation to help launch our on-water science, marine science program. So that has been a great thing. And I missed an opportunity to tell my board at the November meeting that, or at our December meeting, so about 3 weeks after we received these gifts, that our donations were down for the month by 97.6%, and then they didn't get out and start raising some money to match the previous month's intake. But we are moving forward. Within a month, we will start putting a new roof on the building, and we'll see how far $750,000 goes towards meeting that. We also will be going to schematic design for designing the interior spaces of our building at some point this year, so that's moving forward. Our grand vision, our grand plan, is to have a completely renovated 45,000 square foot facility by the summer of 2012. And there are some breakpoints where we would reevaluate that. We do have another goal of $4 million this year and $4 million next year. We had a good January, so we're excited about the momentum that is in place for that. The launching of our science project has been a real boon because it's now one of those projects where the ideas begin to come out of the woodwork, and now it's a challenge of not what do we do, it's how do we corral and manage all the great ideas that are in place. We're formally partnering with 4 school districts, and my objective by the end of the year is to have 12 school districts on board to be able to be doing that, and we're also working with the private schools as well. So it's a lot of fun to be able to begin to see this thing happen and not get. It must be interesting to you, Dick, to think all the way back and see what everybody's doing and how this is going forward. We do have the Northwest Steam Society will be down in August the 6th for their annual meeting, so I invite you to come down and
sit
with your boat. 35 of them, they say. So we'll hope that does come to pass. They're those of you who know them, they're a delightful group to work with. And it's been, they've been planning this now for 2 years, so it's exciting to begin to see that take place. I'm actually a little remiss. I was hoping some people from Portland were going to be here. They invited me to speak to them in November, a group of 40 strong who were very interested in reinvigorating their Maritime Center project. They were all saying, oh, we're going to come to the river meeting. And a great group of people. I tried to persuade them. I mean, they were, you know, they were looking at us and listening to you, and you know, I tried to tell them that, you know, those of you sitting in this room are probably have more potential than any of us ever had at the time, at the stage that you were at, to be able to do these things. And I think they're a little reluctant to step out and do this. And not unlike the rest of us, they have a city government that's not real enthusiastic about what they were doing. And so it is a long battering ram experience to persuade local government to be involved. But I just told them that if you wear them down, they really will come in, because they only get 2 year election cycles, and you have the benefit of the long view. So it's all exciting. It's wonderful to be here. Really look forward. It's great to be back here in the jewel of the crown. And it's always, I'm always reminded every time I make a presentation somewhere, but are you going to be as good as the Center for Women's Vote? Are you going to be as good as the Columbia River Maritime Museum? And I say, no, but I'm going to try. But it's great to be here.
Can I toss one in here?
Sure.
You asked me a long ago if I would be willing to work on a joke, and you also asked me to keep my eyes open for any exhibits that somebody had in their back closet right now that they weren't using. And we have a neat exhibit right now from Bainbridge and Hall Brothers.
Yeah.
But this would be a good group to ask anybody has any exhibits that they're...
Yeah, excellent point. As we continue to develop the facility, we are looking to borrow things. I've extended a number of invitations to groups. I'm really glad that the Hall Brothers exhibit in there was one of those great ones where everything was so easily transferred, just brought right in. We altered our front room color scheme to accommodate that only thing, the color scheme that they used in their facility. It's a great piece, and it's fun to watch people like magnets go to the images to do that. So it's a real privilege to have that in here. We won't kick in our major self-designed exhibits until 2012 and 2013. So what we want to be able to do is to showcase the work that the rest of you are doing, and as a means of doing that, it helps promote each of your organizations to do that. So we do have a decent amount of space, as you can see here, but it's interesting as we think about the design for this, is how quickly 45,000 square feet can be eaten up. The science center that will be inside the building is currently budgeted at 6,000 square feet. And so the building is a fascinating structure. And as I often tell people, that the good news is we have a 45,000 square foot heritage building that's 110 years old, and the bad news is that we have a 45,000 square foot building that's 210 years old. But it's a fun challenge. We're glad it's happening. And the nice thing that for me is to be able to respond to the ideas that people bring to it when they bring their own impressions of what we can do now. Our science center is one of those reactions where somebody came in to me 6 years ago and said, you know what you could do then? And we continue to work that out.
Not to take a note, but I just want to throw it out as a future topic. I love one thing you mentioned, like the steam society putting down for events. And I'm just going, now that we have new media that we can use, Twitter and blogs and all this stuff, I'm thinking, God, I'd really love to let the folks on our list know when the STEAM folks are down there. Or sometimes I see emails from Lessing or organizations saying there's rides on the Lady Washington here on a triple weekend. And somehow I think it'd be benefit to our members and stuff to know about those kinds of things. And I don't know if that's vehicle for sharing information on that. But
we're very much in I know personally in a learning curve on how social media can be used. I don't know how to use it. There is a local funder has driven all of the nonprofit arts and performance groups together to discuss it. They've funded our meetings, 3-4 meetings a year, and all of us are wrestling with this challenge of a newspaper that is flat enough to sit in things that have not already occurred. So it's very difficult to announce things in there. And I respect the problems that newspapers are in, but we're trying to find some ways of how we can let the community know it. It's some sort of a vehicle that people will, as credibility as people know when they get to it, has all this information, and I think we can do that among ourselves too. And I would love to have brochures from everybody so that when people come in, that all the maritime organizations do. I'm going to take a stack and I'll try and steal as many of these.
There's more in the trunk of my car. Please,
I'm
going to
be filtering items from you.
Second, maybe for a future
today.
Work session or topic.
Yeah.
These things that we're talking about, the craft promotion,
yeah.
Both printed and yeah. New media. I mean, not just all right now, but maybe yeah. On your agenda sometimes.
And lastly, what you're doing here is so great. Last October, we were both at the Western Museum Association, and part of what the Tacoma Funder is trying to do is to try and see what of the Balboa Park Consortium can be replicated. And I really love what you've done here because it's very close to that. So, we're all ears and learning. And then mentioning the WMA, I would urge each of you, if we're in Portland in October, it's a great organization, and I gain a lot out of it. The cheap drive for you, since it's up here, they alternate between north and south each year. It's an interesting, the organization is also an interesting lesson, I think, for all of us. I mean, it's a great cohesive organization, and the very last event of the meeting this year, they closed down the organization because of funding. And so what has been so neat to that is that now the executive directors we're all in a sense donating a portion of our time to help keep that organization running. And I'm very impressed with what I'm getting in the emails and they've had their biggest response for proposed seminars that they've ever had at a time when they don't have that. And so, I'm watching and waiting as to how all of us or the form in which all of us will survive this downturn. I'm not doubting that we will survive, but I think that the more we keep our nose to the grindstone, it's going to be very fascinating how we all come out of this.
But it took me 3 years to understand there are two WMAs.
Yeah.
One is the Western Museum Association affiliated with the AAM, and the other one that I talked about in St. Carter this year is the Washington Museum Association. So that I have to say, it was one of the best conferences I've been at. The conference organizers, the volunteers, they actually go to the venue together before the conference happens to make sure it's all organized properly. It's amazing.
And each time I've gone, it has been worth 4 times what I paid for it.
And it's in October, you think?
Yeah, October.
Okay, well, Rick will be next, Bainbridge Island, and then we'll have a lunch break, and while we're having lunch, let's...
I get to talk in my mouthful.
Yeah. And then we get into the panel discussion on surviving this economy.
Well, I'll be very quick. We're lucky to have Rick Chandler, who not only designs, but he executes, he does all kinds of things, and as an example of our financial situation, we're lucky that we moved downtown Winslow because we have a lot more attendance than we've ever had before. But our curator resigned because she was going to have a baby. So Rick took over that one too. So he's not only facilities and all that sort of thing, but now he's the curator. So we're just lucky to have him and Hank Helm, our director. But anyway, so from the Hall Brothers, we're lucky that it came out at the same time that the book did. And so they sort of worked together, and now we have an exhibit called The Salish Sea, which is the orca, explains all the orca pods and populations and how they're doing and this and that, and what is the savings key. It involves a lot of federal interfacing too. So, and we have a new book regarding the island. It's called Let It Go, Lillian. It's the story of the Croatians in the fishing industry who all the Vintage Island, through those people who moved there from Croatia. So anyway, we're glad to be around and glad to be a part of this group, that's for sure. I've been here since, what, 92 or
something
like
that?
Yeah,
yep. We're still here.
Okay, that's it.
Before we break, I'd like to say that I went through the last May, I went through that exhibit, and I really enjoyed the exhibit. And for a small museum, the layout is really good.
It's taken a lot of effort, and we're lucky to get money from heaven. He died, and all of a sudden we got money we never even thought of before. So, and not a lot, but a huge amount. Enough to keep us going.
We'll just remind you that the outrageous lunch cost to keep this organization afloat is $15, and it goes to that person right there.